G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Well, outspoken federal MP George Christensen is joining us today at a time in his political career where he's even more inclined to say what he thinks. It might be because he's decided to retire at the next federal election. He's one of the rare breed of federal politicians who's unashamedly Christian in his approach to lots of the big ethical issues. He's been a fierce pro-life advocate behind the Born Alive Protection Bill, wanting to enforce life-sustaining treatment for all babies born alive. And he's even angered his own colleagues more recently for comments, let me just say, calling Victorian police officers thugs for their heavy-handed treatment of protesters in Melbourne against mandatory vaccination. He's also been accused of spreading disinformation or misinformation about coronavirus and has called for an end to COVID-19 restrictions. Well, an opportunity today to interact with one of the most outspoken MPs in the federal parliament today, George Christensen. He's the member for Dawson, representing the people of the Mackay region in Queensland. George Christensen, a special welcome along to 2020.
Good morning, Neil, and God bless you and your listeners.
Lots of things to talk about today, George, and we'll get into some of those really controversial issues as we go, but let's start with an update. Last time we were talking about your Born Alive Protection Bill, wanting to enforce life-sustaining treatment for all babies born alive. Where are things at with your bill?
Well, look, I'm pleased to say that we're able to introduce that into the federal parliament. So it now actually is a bill sitting before the parliament awaiting, you know, something to happen. I was able to move that bill, and it was seconded by Vince Connolly, a member of parliament from Western Australia, a Liberal member over there. Look, the problem with private members' bills is that government really controls the agenda for what goes on, what gets debated and what gets voted on in Parliament. So it really would need the government to actually back the bill to be debated and voted on. That's yet to happen. But what I can tell you, Neil, and tell your listeners, is that quietly a number of government MPs and senators have come to me expressing a great deal of support for this initiative, and they've told me that they're willing to pick up all the material that I have collated on this issue and carry on the fight for those vulnerable young babies that are born mostly prematurely as a result of abortion procedures, and ensure that they have appropriate medical treatment. So there is hope. It's probably a bit off in the distance, but there's hope that this issue will be litigated further by other members and senators.
Well, I imagine that there is possibility here that there might be some that say, let's just leave this on the table for a long time and things will just fizzle out because George will be gone because, hey, George, you're intending to retire at the end of this term of Parliament. Some might be thinking, well, we'll just hold this over and before you know it, George will be gone.
But the sad news for them that they might be right on the gone front, but the sad news is there's other MPs and senators within the government that are really wanting to continue prosecuting the case. So, I'm going to be meeting with them over the remaining weeks of Parliament this year and imparting all of the background information and details to them so that they can continue on the fight for life. And, you know, people in that group that probably I can name would be Senator Matt Canavan and Vince Connolly MP. Senator Matt Canavan actually has proposed his own private members bill that he's going to put up in the Senate if he hasn't done it already, and that is removing Medicare funding for sex selection of babies. And, he makes the quite humorous line and what is actually a dark issue that if nowadays we can't we announce that the baby's a boy or a baby's a girl and we've apparently misgendered it, how dare we do it in the womb? So it is a serious issue, and he's looking at ending Medicare funding for those abortions which are based on the sex selection.
We'll try and monitor that along. Look, there's real momentum now, perhaps more momentum than there has been for a decade or two, given what's going on in the United States, in Texas, where they've banned abortion because they say, well, when there's a heartbeat, there's a baby there. And that's causing all sorts of controversy right across the whole United States and perhaps right across the Western world. Is that momentum catching on anywhere here, do you think?
Look, I think it's yet to catch on. I think that the unfortunately, we've been on the back foot, right, in Australia in recent times. I mean, we've seen real sort of radical liberalisation of abortion laws to the point where, essentially, in a lot of states, we've got abortion on demand. You know, pretty much without any real sort of barrier to getting it. Certainly, that's the case in Queensland and in Victoria. New South Wales, fairly similar. South Australia, there's a few little safeguards. But we've started seeing this sort of really the pendulum swinging far too far in the way of abortion on demand. I'm always a believer that the pendulum has to swing back at some stage. I think that America's there at the moment where you've got Texas doing what it's doing, the Supreme Court allowing it, essentially. So that's almost a decision in itself, which flies in the face of Roe v. Wade, and I think we've got Donald Trump to thank for selecting the right Supreme Court justices, actually. Hopefully we will see the pendulum swing back in Australia and things like this bill that I'm putting forward become reality. Things like ending not just Medicare funding for sex selection abortion, but hey, why should you and I and your listeners who probably disagree completely with abortion have our taxes actually funding it? I think we should have Medicare funding for all abortions ended.
A big ethical issue in there, and there might be listeners who have a question or a comment, even a critique. I want to open our talkback lines and let listeners in on our conversation today. Listeners might like to contribute. You might have a question for George Christensen. You might have your own thoughts. And let's open up the agenda to anything that listeners might like to raise today so far as the federal government goes. So 1-800-316-316 to join in our conversation. I want to touch on vaccinations today too, and particularly mandatory vaccines. You've been outspoken on issues around mandatory vaccines. It's one of those things that a lot of Christians are concerned about. George, what are your latest thoughts on mandatory vaccinations as that now is growing around Australia?
Yeah. And sorry, I hope you don't hear that helicopter flying overhead. I'm sitting out in the veranda in Mackay here, and there's a emergency helicopter flying overhead. But regarding mandatory vaccinations, this flies in the face of human rights. Now, it also flies in the face of what the government said at the start of this this whole thing. Prime Minister said straight up at the start of the pandemic, when we had these vaccines that were mooted, that they would not be mandatory. It would be a voluntary program. Now, that gets the big green tick for me. Because it's all going to come down to free and informed consensual choice in this matter. Because we are dealing with, if someone wants to get the vaccine, go and get the vaccine. If someone doesn't want to get it, they don't have to. And particularly I say they shouldn't have to in this case, because this is under provisional approval by the Therapeutic Goods Administration, right? Provisional approval. We've got to remember that fact. There is no long-term safety testing on these vaccines. So people have legitimate concerns around it now. It's not concerns that should just be dismissed as anti-vaxxer. I've had all of my vaccines, apart from the COVID-19 one. My daughter's had all of her vaccines that she's had up until this point, so has my wife. I'm not an anti-vaxxer by any stretch of the imagination. But I have some concerns about the lack of long-term safety testing around these vaccines, and so do many other Australians. To have governments state governments mainly imposing requirements on particular sectors. In order to keep your job, you have to have the jab. To have private corporations going around doing it, we've had Qantas talking about it or doing it, and we've had now BHP saying they're going to do it. This flies in the face of not just the Prime Minister's statement that it would be voluntary. It flies in the face of both the Australian immunisation guidelines found in the Australian immunisation handbook, and it flies in the face of international protocols that have actually been developed around our rights as citizens. One thing I can refer to, Neil, and it's often overlooked here, so the Universal Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights, adopted in 2005, says this: any preventative, diagnostic, and therapeutical medical intervention is only to be carried out with prior, free, and informed consent of the person concerned based on adequate information. The consent should, where appropriate, be expressed and may be withdrawn by the person concerned at any time and for any reason without disadvantage or prejudice. Now, that's an international human rights obligation that's binding on Australia. I could go over to our... I talked about the handbook and the guidelines in the handbook.
Of course, there are some Australian constitutional issues there that we've unpacked here. The idea of civil conscription, where the government comes between that sacred, almost, relationship between doctor and patient, and even our constitution ruling the idea that that would never to happen. Hey, we're taking calls today on 1-800-316-316. You may have a question or a comment. You might have a critique for our conversation, something you want to put to George Christensen. I've mentioned he is a Christian believer. He's very outspoken on a lot of different issues. The talkback line open, 1-800-316-316. What if we let listeners in and help direct our conversation today? George, let's hear from Chris in Guyra in New South Wales. Hello, Chris. Welcome along.
Thank you for taking my call today. And I just wanted to say thank you to George for being a standout politician when many of them have laid down on their backs and pandered to the global propaganda that is the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine. I think this, what we've been seeing lately, perpetuated by the media and politicians, no jab, no pay, no jab, no job, is one of the most un-Australian things in the history. And I really hope all listeners can, next election, next state election, next federal election, we've got to remember what these pollies have done to us. And if you want to get the vax, you get the vax, that's great. But as George said, provisional approval by the Therapeutic Goods Administration. And that is really an alarming thing.
Chris, good thoughts there. Response from you, George?
No, Chris is right. It's to say it's un-Australian, spot on. I mean, I was talking about the Australian Immunisation Handbook. So the guidelines that the Australian nation has for giving out vaccinations, here's a clear sentence: vaccines must be given voluntarily in the absence of undue pressure, coercion, or manipulation. So tell me, how is that statement, which is supposed to rule the administration of vaccinations in this country, how does that statement in any way, shape, or form line up with what state governments are doing with these no jab, no job mandates, with these no jab, no shop mandates? It just doesn't at all. We have governments now, quite frankly, thumbing their nose at human rights, thumbing their nose at actually guidelines like this that have been laid down and in place for ages. What's sad about it all, Neil, more than just the politicians doing these terrible things and abusing, you know, their privilege as governments, quite frankly, is the fact the media has become a cheer squad for it, by and large, with good people like yourself exempted. And even more sad than that is that the sections of the public that are also cheering it on. I just can't believe how Australians have been so easily able to be swayed into not only throwing away their freedoms, but condemning other people who are actually pointing out that freedoms are being lost. and that this sort of discrimination is going on. We've become a very divided nation over this pandemic, and more so the government's responses to the pandemic.
And I might say that over the past 18 months, our primary focus at Vision has been on the loss of freedoms, not so much on the health issue with regard to the vaccination, given that Vision has a policy. We say we won't tell you whether you should or whether you should not get a vaccine. But when we can see rights and freedoms being trampled, we've given a lot of airtime to those particular issues, and there could be some more of those today. Let's take another call. Greg Bonder, who is one of our regular guests here on 2020, calling in from Family Voice Australia. Hello, Greg. Welcome.
A brilliant
man.
Good
morning, Alan. Good morning, George.
Greg. Yes, great, Greg. More power to you and power to Family Voice Australia. You guys do a brilliant job.
Yeah, George, I just wanted to make sure that, look, I hope you're not leaving, but if you are, you know that we're right behind you with the bill. We've written to everybody in federal parliament, as you well know. We've had our meetings. But more important, I have to tell you, George, I spoke to the governor's office in Texas, and we're trying to get some strategy on how they managed to get the abortion banned almost in Texas. So looking forward to getting some details from them. But, George, just a quick call to say you're doing a great job, Neil. You know yourself that George is a wonderful Christian man, and if we can get this abortion bill up that George has proposed as a private member's bill, then we're 100% behind you, George.
George, thanks, Greg. Well, Greg Bondo, thanks so much for your call, Greg, and an example there of how organisations like Family Voice Australia work hand in hand with our political system too, and obviously your door is open to someone like a Greg Bondo from Family Voice Australia, but a lot of other pollies not necessarily quite so open to hear a Christian viewpoint on these things. Any thoughts on that, George? Are our federal politicians open? Do they have a door open for when the Christian organisation like Family Voice Australia or the Australian Christian Lobby comes knocking? Are they listening?
Some of them do. I certainly do. And I know quite a few others in the Liberal and National parties who would listen to them. But yeah, you're right. It's starting to become a thing where you might have people that don't necessarily open their door to Family Voice Australia or the Australian Christian Lobby or any other sort of religious group. And we just heard in the interview you did with Bill Muhlenberg, who's another great man in this country, pointing out, what is going wrong with our culture. Him saying that it almost is like you'll only get the door open to you in sort of politically correct, polite society now if you are a Christian who believes in the right things. You're a Christian that just goes along with the zeitgeist rather than someone that stands up for actual gospel values. So, we've got to push against that because it is wrong. And what the example that you guys talked about Damien Perrottet, is a key case in point. Could you imagine if Damien was a Jew or was a Muslim? Would those same questions be being asked by the media and same criticisms being directed to him? It's just funny that it's only the Christian religion. When someone takes their faith very, very seriously, do these criticisms come into play? So, yeah, it does need to be pushed against. Individual people can do that in our democracy. Tell your politician that you want them to be listening to these organisations because they represent your views and values.
George, coming up to news quickly, let's squeeze in an extra call before the news. Nigel is in Wynyard in Tasmania. Hi, Nigel. Welcome along.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks.
What are your thoughts quickly, Nigel?
I just wanted to get George's opinion on the use of ivermectin as a treatment for COVID. It's now well known and well proven that not only thousands but hundreds of millions of people are being treated with ivermectin for COVID, and the Australian government just refuses to accept that there is a treatment for COVID.
Just a very quick response now, and we might come back to this after the news. George, you've been outspoken on this ivermectin, and there's some new drugs that are getting the endorsement of our health authorities, but you've been on this issue of ivermectin. It goes against the narrative. Quick response here.
quick response is, while they may say the jury's out, there's plenty of studies showing that ivermectin has had some level of efficacy with dealing with COVID-19 and preventing it. And it's wrong of the Therapeutic Goods Administration to have banned GPs from administering this drug to help people who want to prevent themselves from getting this this virus, or who want to deal with the virus directly.
No agenda item off limits today. Let's take another call. John is in Victoria. Hi, John. Welcome along.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Very well. John, what are your thoughts?
Look, I just, as the date closes here in Victoria for the mandatory vaccination, I think a lot of people are feeling pressured and maybe even pressured into just taking the jab, unfortunately. But I just want to give them hope in saying that, you know, you're not alone. There's tens of thousands of people in Victoria that just don't know where to go. And just a little guidance. There are a lot of class action lawsuits being stirred up. There are unions starting up, like Red Union is a good one to go to. And there's GoFundMe pages such as Victoria Authorized Workers Unite Against Mandate. If you're not sure what to do, or if you just want to help, these are some of the things you can do, and just get together. If we stand alone, we don't have a chance, but if we stand united and push back, even against a stubborn Andrews government, there is possibilities of change. So I just want to encourage everyone out there.
John, a lot of people being hurt by the pandemic, and yes, there is a major health issue at hand, but as you say, class actions, and the courts could well be clogged with all sorts of cases into the future. George Christensen, what are your thoughts for John?
Well, he's right. There is hope out there. Unfortunately, the situation in the political arena is fairly hopeless. I mean, we've had state governments impose these draconian measures on their citizens. The federal politicians have essentially washed their hands of the whole thing, although I think that they should have actually stepped in and said that, no, you're not using our Australian Immunisation Register data to enable any discrimination. But there is hope in the courts. And, you know, I think that that's where it's got the battle is well and truly ultimately going to be had in the courts. And I hope that, that justice prevails, because people shouldn't be losing their jobs. People shouldn't be deprived of being members of society because they don't want to take don't want to participate in a medical procedure which is only provisionally approved. So, you know, but to think that this is happening in our country beggars belief, but it is. But hope is out there now.
Okay, John, thank you so much for your call. And just before we move on here, George, it's your government here that appears to be recognising that you can't mandate vaccinations for all those reasons we said, but taking the other option of just handballing this off to state governments and to business. So doesn't some of the blame stand at the feet of the Morrison government here? Because the government could have said, no, you can't mandate vaccinations right from the beginning.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And I've been quite critical of that fact. In fact, I put up a private members bill alongside Craig Kelly that actually would have barred any sort of form of vaccine passport or vaccine discrimination whereby you had to show papers. That's privacy. No one should be demanding your medical records. So it did that, and it also stopped discrimination on the grounds of employment or anything else in relation to your medical status. But yet we tried to get that private members bill up for a vote, and it ended up being me and Craig Kelly sitting on one side of the parliament and everyone else that was in the parliament on the other side. So, you know, there's no hope there politically to get this sorted. The hope that we have is going to come from lawyers that are fighting for justice and our court system, and I hope that you know that victory for common sense and justice will prevail.
Let's take another call. Lawrence is in Perth. Hello, Lawrence. Welcome along.
Oh, thank you very much. In the abortion debate, there's no mention of the father through, for example, confirmed by a DNA testing of the baby.
Lawrence, so far as DNA testing of babies, you're talking about the abortion debate, issues around fathers' rights. Any thoughts here, George?
I think, you know, it's an interesting topic, and quite honestly, we have a bit of policy schizophrenia in this country. Not that I'm advocating for this first hypothetical that I'm putting up now, but we have a system called child support in this country. So if a bloke ends up with a woman and she has a child and the bloke doesn't want the child, the bloke still has the full financial responsibility in paying for that child through to the age of 18 through our child support system. At the same time, if a woman falls pregnant to a bloke and the bloke actually wants the baby, the woman has the right to abort the baby. There is a problem here. I don't know how, if people can't see the inconsistency in those policy approaches, then they're quite honestly blind or ideologically blind, one of the two. But the reality is that fathers should have a say I don't want my child aborted. It's a child that belongs to both parents, not just one of them.
I don't think you'll get too much disagreement from the majority of our listeners today. Lawrence in Perth, thank you so much for your call. Our talkback line is open. 1-800-316-316. No topic that's out of bounds today. 1-800-316-316. One lady called through, had an appointment, couldn't hold. She had two questions. I'll just pop these for you, George. She says, yes. Why is there a gag order on doctors who have a different view regarding COVID vaccines and treatments? And the second one, why are the adverse effects of vaccines being suppressed? Now, that's a couple of controversial questions. What sort of response would you have for that lady?
Well, it's only controversial in the current sort of zeitgeist that we're in, and she's right. I mean, doctors have been gagged. They shouldn't be, but this has been a decision made by the Australian Health Prudential, the Australian Health Practitioners Regulatory Authority. And I know myself that many doctors are afraid to actually say something publicly or to their patients around vaccinations, concerns that they actually hold themselves because that they could be suspended or have some disciplinary action taken against them. I don't know how this tallies up with science. I mean, science, if it's that rigorous and the facts are there, you don't need to impose gag orders on people or sin bin them, have them censored on social media and all the rest of it to prop up an agenda. So I think that that's one thing in itself. She's right. How they're doing it? Well, that's just what the government agency has determined. I can't do anything about it. I disagree with it. I can't do anything about it. On the other issue, though, Neil, just to refresh my memory, there was the issue of the doctor.
That was
the issue of adverse reactions.
It was adverse effects of vaccines being suppressed.
Well, look, I've spoken to doctors at major hospitals that tell me that is the case, and there is some evidence around it. Actually, there's two different reporting systems in Australia around adverse reactions. One of them was a survey approach that was done, and I just saw this information the other night. The survey indicated that there was something like 43% of people who had had the vaccine that had an adverse reaction. Now, that's a huge number, but that's what the survey reported, and it was an official government agency that done the survey. But if you have a look at the numbers that are officially on the TGA website, it's nowhere near 43%. So they are being underreported. Again, doctors in major hospitals have told me that that they're just simply not reporting them. They don't have to report them. They're worried about reporting them because of what it might mean to their careers and reputation. So this is a situation we have in this country, is that, we've got people frightened to actually tell the truth.
I think there's an issue around where you find relevant evidence for the side that you take. And I had one guest on recently who said, if you want to find out what the medical community is saying, search under PubMed. So PubMed, and I'm not so familiar with it, but that's where the doctors are seeking their own information. And so you can do searches there and you can find out the numbers of peer peer-reviewed articles, journal articles that are about one side or another, and you can find some evidence for which side you're thinking is the one that's got the most evidence or the most relevant. Let's continue to take calls. Christina is in Hobart in Tasmania. Hi, Christina.
Hello, I'm just taking you off speaker. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Look, if I get a bit emotional, please just bear with me. I want to say thank you to George Christensen for telling the truth and standing up and supporting others like Craig Kelly and the likes. I was unlawfully terminated from my workplace as of from the 17th of September because I didn't take the so-called vaccine. That was quite a hostile termination as I look at it. You don't have a choice. And I wasn't willing to take something that I don't know what's going into my body, but I've done my research. I am not touching that. They would have to handcuff me down and force it in me that way. But I'm without a wage. I'm really concerned also about the QR coding check-in. It's against the Privacy Act as well too, but yet you see it everywhere, everywhere. And why isn't there something done about it? It's violating our privacy.
Christina, lots of people refuse the vaccine for all sorts of reasons. And of course, I think most people listening to us today will be on your side saying you have a right to resist and not accept the vaccine. Others will say the vaccine and all of the detail that's coming out now is showing that it is perfectly safe. So there is going to be two sides to the argument. But losing your job because you don't get the vaccine. George, what are your thoughts for Christina?
Look, I'm very sad to hear that she's one of those victims of this policy approach. And I don't know how that at all correlates with keeping people safe, robbing people of their livelihoods, in some cases putting them into poverty or dire mental health situations, is certainly not keeping people safe, and it's not keeping people healthy. So that's one thing. As for the issue about QR codes, look, at the start of all of this, I'm very happy to pick up a phone and take a photo of a QR code and go into it to go into a restaurant and that, because I understand it's a tracing system. But when is it going to end now? And we've had state health officers, chief health officers, that have actually said that it should continue on forever. Well, no, it shouldn't. I mean, government does not need to know the time, where we are, what we're doing. That is called privacy. It's something that we respect in a free society, in a democratic society, or at least we should, and we have up until this pandemic. So I think that it needs to go at some point too, and I think sooner rather than later, because that system has been abused. While we were told at the start it would never ever be used for anything else other than tracing COVID-19 cases, we know across multiple states that police forces have actually tapped into that data to look at potential crimes that have been committed. And that again, this is the thin edge of the wedge. That's where your privacy really does get invaded.
Christina in Hobart, thanks so much for your call. Taking calls, 1800 316 316. Caroline is in Toowoomba, Queensland. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how are you going?
Good, Caroline. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I've been a registered nurse since 1982. Some of my credentials are quite out there, and I don't usually brag about it, but I was Southeast Queensland Nurse of the Year in 1983, and I've done a lot of emergency nursing in my career and aviation medicine, and I've extended it to international flying. I would like to say that the Prime Minister actually said and declared that the COVID injection will not be mandated to anybody, and he believes in freedom without coercion. Well, I'm sorry to say, but it's not happening in the clip. And the Queensland Health has mandated the vaccine to be given to all healthcare workers. That includes doctors, nurses, midwives, scientists, ambulance officers, wardies, cleaners, kitchen hands, physios, occupational health, social workers, radiographers, admin. And there are thousands in Queensland that are refusing to have this jab and putting their jobs on the line. Now, to me, that is the most unselfish act that the healthcare workers can be doing. Simply because... Yeah. There has been a failure to protect nurses and healthcare workers in Queensland, the freedom to choose a medical procedure that has not undergone the safety trials of normal vaccines. I give vaccines, I have had all my vaccines, but not this one. Many are going to be walking from the industry that they've given their life to.
Caroline, you've made some quite amazing points in there, and reflecting the medical community in the state of Queensland there. A quick thought or two from you, George. Some of that ground we've covered, but what are your thoughts for Caroline?
Well, look, you know, she's right. We were told that this was going to be not mandatory. We were told it was going to be voluntary, but I could say that even I saw on the Queensland Nurses Union websites where, you know, they got an FAQ there. Do I have to get the vaccine is one of the questions. And the response is, well, everyone has a choice, but with the choice comes consequences, some of them professional. Well, that's not a free choice. You know, and I saw a very funny cartoon the other day of a mugger holding up a woman and telling her, give her my bag. You know, she's got the choice, hasn't she? She's still got the choice as to whether or not she gives the mugger the bag, but if she doesn't, obviously something's going to be fired. And in the case of the nurses, it's true as well. Someone is going to be fired if they say no. It's not a free, informed choice. It is coercion. It's against the national guidelines on immunisation, and it's against international human rights obligations. This is going to be played out in the courts. This is where it's going to be won. And I think that the guidelines and the international obligations, and you referred to the Constitution, that's all going to come into effect.
Caroline, thank you so much for your call. And running short of time, just to come back to one of the newest developments, the Merck drug company, they've got a drug called Molnupiravir. And yes, it is yet to be approved by the TGA. It's looking very promising. We were talking a little bit earlier on about the ivermectin drug, and there are all sorts of issues there. Whether it's got the stamp of approval that comes from the TGA is important here. There is a good development there. Is that, do you think, George, the possibility for people who don't want to take a vaccine and are happy to take a drug? I mean, in some sense, it's the same type of thing. But what are your thoughts around the latest development from this latest drug?
Well, the trial on that drug showed that it was completely effective in stopping any deaths from COVID-19. They had a group that took the drug and then a control group that took a placebo, and there was 8 deaths amongst the placebo group. So no deaths amongst the drug group. So it looks fairly good. I've yet to see a bit more information out of it. But the interesting thing is Merck developed ivermectin. Now, ivermectin's been panned, including by Merck, because it's off patent, so they don't get all of the big money for it. It's just surprise, surprise that Merck comes out with a new drug that, I do note, does exactly the same thing, operates in exactly the same way that ivermectin does. So you'll excuse me for being a bit cynical about the whole thing. Merck will get paid a lot of money from this drug, as they wouldn't have got paid with ivermectin. I notice Pfizer's also coming out with a new drug that has ivermectin as a derivative of it. It's being mocked online, calling it Pfizermectin. So, you know, it's just very interesting how Big Pharma works and all of the dollar signs that come along with it. But yes, look, these drugs probably will be able to treat this virus, and you know, again, that's going to bring into question as to why do we need vaccine discrimination and vaccine mandates.
On the drug for a moment, there's some moral issues around perhaps the thinking of leaders as they outlaw drugs like ivermectin. The problem is if people are taking ivermectin, and let's even include this new Molnupiravir in that same category, the fears have been that people may feel protected when they may not be completely protected. They may then refuse to be vaccinated, and of course, then there's a reluctance to be tested for COVID or even seek medical care. So I can see the reasoning why they might have outlawed the ivermectin drug.
That's exactly what the TGA said. That's exactly what the TGA said in their ban and off-label prescriptions of ivermectin. They said that we're worried that basically people are going to who might then go on to develop COVID-19 might not go and get tested, might not go and get the appropriate hospital treatment that they need. But that criticism could be labelled at the vaccines too. You know, getting a vaccine, we have heard from chief health officers in this country and major authorities across the world, does not actually stop you from getting COVID-19. So if that criticism can be applied to ivermectin and ivermectin's banned, then what does it do for vaccines? You know, Neil, you could go and get a vaccination, be fully vaccinated, develop COVID-19 and think to yourself, no, I'm vaccinated. I don't have COVID-19. There's no possibility I could have it. You could then go out in the community and spread it. You could not go and get the hospital treatment. You could not go and get tested. So it's a false argument, because if that argument leads to the banning of ivermectin, then hell, it should lead to the banning of the vaccines. By that logic.
Yes, there's lots of different ways you can look at that. Hey, I'm going to have to draw a line under the calls. Time is running short, and there's one very important issue which I wish we'd raised a little earlier, because one of the things that comes with a general health order, and whether this affects everyone who might gather together at any particular point, and there's some, you know, some lifting of lockdowns that are ahead, but churches and the way that they may be affected by a two-tiered system, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Have you given much thought, George, to the way that churches are likely to be treated under general health orders? Because I know that there are a lot of leaders who are saying this may be a time to be exercising some right of even resisting obeying that law, some civil disobedience. A quick thought on churches?
Churches should resist any attempt to say that unvaccinated people are not welcome in their worship services. That is just wrong on so many levels, theologically, politically, human rights level. We all have a right to worship, and we should not be discriminated against. So more power to those church leaders, to the bishops, to others, other pastors that are saying there's no way that's going to take place in my church. But, you know, the heavy hand of government will no doubt try and come down on them. I could say to those church leaders, I will stand alongside you. I will do what I can to help in those situations. And I noticed that there are some church leaders, unfortunately, like the Anglican Bishop of Newcastle, who actually is saying to his priests, dob in those people, you know, who turn up that are unvaccinated. That is an extremely unchristian way of dealing with this issue, and that approach should be absolutely and thoroughly rejected.
Well, I know that church leaders are very prayerful and considerate, looking for the right wisdom in moving forward in all of these things, and church leaders have been very open to the idea of temporary health orders and in the interests of the good health of all Australians. But there are those who are saying, how far can this go? And there may be a time coming which we'll see Christian leaders speaking up more vocally. Well, it's been a great opportunity. I've got a line under any more calls. We won't be able to take calls. Thanks to everyone who did call in. But George Christensen, good getting an update with you today. And let's plan another one of these before too long. Member for Dawson, representing the wonderful people in the Mackay region. And thanks so much for joining us today, George.
Thanks, Neil.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.